You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
The first 10 were obtained on July 30th.
And then the second eight? Second set of eight.
Those were also on July 30th. Okay. I did not examine all 18 at the same time. So I have a report with the first 10 and then a report with the second eight.
And the year that these were obtained would have been what?
2020.
Okay. And are you aware of the date of the allegations as to when JJ and Tylee were placed on Mr. Daybell's property?
I believe it was in 2019.
Would September of 2019 sound correctly?
Yes.
So the time between the allegations and the testing would have amounted to about how much time?
From September to July. So almost a year, 10 months.
10 months. Yeah. I had to count with my fingers. Probably both of us did.
Yes.
Okay. And in the interim between September and July, before September, we don't know who had contact with those tools, do we?
No.
We don't know how that DNA got on those tools, do we?
I do not.
What we know is that they were found in Mr. Daybell's garage, correct?
That's correct.
So the presumption is that at least in part, being on Mr. Daybell's property, they may have been the ownership of Mr. Daybell, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And now on the 18 tools that you tested, how many of those had Mr. Daybell's DNA on them?
None of the stains or material I tested had Chad Daybell's DNA.
What about the handles of all of those tools? Did you find Mr. Daybell's DNA on any of the handles?
We did not swab the handles for DNA. We generally do not do that testing up front when the ownership of the item is not in question.
But there's no certainty as to who handled those tools. Is that right?
No. And if they had been owned at the property for years prior to the crime, you would expect to find any of the family members' DNA on there through non-criminal means, such as buying the shovel, using the shovel in a different day, things like that.
So in fact, if someone had owned those tools for some time, it would be your expectation that at least somewhere on the tools, you would have found Mr. Daybell's DNA. Would that be fair?
Yeah. Yes, it's fair.
And it doesn't necessarily mean the handle, the base or the shaft of the, you tested the shafts of these, obviously, correct?
I did not run those samples for DNA. I simply swabbed them for preservation.
Okay. And when you did that, at no time on the shafts of these handles or even on the blades of these handles, did you ever find any of Mr. Daybell's DNA? Is that correct?
I did not run those samples for DNA, but nothing I did run for DNA had Chad Daybell's DNA on it.
Okay. The necklace that was found on the property, did you find any latent fingerprints or any DNA of anyone on that?
I did not do latent print analysis. That is not my specialty. And I did find some possible material on the necklace that I could have run for DNA. However, it's consumptive. And so I did not get a request to consume it.
And Judge, I previously admitted Defense Exhibit 35. Could I have permission
to use the microphone, please, Mr. Pryor?
Okay. Previously submitted Defense Exhibit 35. Could I have permission to publish?
Yes.
Ms. Dace, I don't know if you can see that or not.
Yes.
Do you recognize any of those tools?
They do appear to be some of the tools that I received.
Could you reference which subpart of that it is, Mr. Pryor, for the record?
I believe that's 35F, Judge.
Thank you.
And Judge, if we could turn off the HDMI for just a moment, please.
Okay. Stop the publication. Thank you, Madam Clerk.
Judge, again, if we could publish again, please.
Yes, you can publish. And if it's different than 35F, explain what it is, please.
And again, do you recognize any of these tools as well?
Yes, some of them appear to be the tools that I received.
Now, I zoomed in under the black shovel and the rake at the handle of the long black shovel. You see that?
The snow shovel?
Under the snow shovel, and the hard rake. There is a gray handled or a brown wood handled shovel. There's a shovel with black, which is black on it, and then the yellow one, and the one in between the yellow and the brown handled shovel. Do you see that one?
Yes, I do.
Can you take a close look at that shovel for me?
I believe it is one of the tools that I received.
Okay, and then down at the bottom of the black, I'm detecting a certain substance on that. Do you see that, or some sort of different coloring? Do you see that?
The off-white type staining?
The off-white texture on the black handle. Do you see that?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Judge,
which,
we can...
Which is that, Mr. Pryor?
Judge, this is 35I. 35I, Judge.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. And Judge, can we stop publication at this point?
Yes.
Judge, could I have... State's Exhibit 201A.
Okay. Exhibit 201A is being given to you, Mr. Pryor.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor. We could use the Elmo, Judge. Now, Ms. Dace, I can't zero in. That looks like the same shovel we talked about with the previous picture that had the white markings on him. Is that correct?
Correct.
Did any time when you obtained this picture, did you observe those same white markings on the bottom of this shovel?
I do not recall. I do take photos of the items, but I can't be sure if they're there and it's hard to see in the lighting or not.
Okay. Okay. But at no time you would remove any observable or debris on any item like that, would you?
I mean, I did for all of these tools remove some trace evidence like hairs and fibers. There were some cobwebs on some of the items. And I did on the tools... heads remove dirt and gentle ashes that were present so that I could better visualize and swab the surfaces. All of that was retained though.
Okay. But you didn't on the actual black part of the handle of this item, you didn't wipe this down or remove any debris. That wouldn't be something you would do, correct?
I wouldn't wipe it down. I do believe on a few of the tools, I collected some fragments from the handles. But I did not swab the handles.
Okay. And this is a true and accurate, a picture of the shovel that you received at the time for your testing. Would that be fair?
That is one of my pictures. I can't be sure if that's the exact picture when I opened it or if this is the one I took later to document my swabbing and analysis.
But it would be fair to say that picture, you other than taking the samples off of the blade of the shovel and maybe on the lower handle, it is not changed in appearance from when you first received the shovel. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay. Judge, I'm done. When you were conducting your investigation of the plastic and the tape, you talked about some DNA that was found on a piece of tape. Is that right?
Yes.
And whose DNA was that?
It was J.J. Vallow's.
Okay. And then other DNA was found on some of the plastic. Is that what you?
No, that was the only sample from the plastic or tape that I obtained a DNA profile from.
And then the hair samples came from where?
The tape that was on that plastic.
So those hair samples weren't just floating freely. They were attached to the actual tape.
Correct.
So at some point, do I understand that the hair samples were, and this is not a technical term, please forgive me, the sticky side of the tape, is that where the hair samples were found?
Yes, the adhesive side of the tape.
The adhesive side. Thank you for the word. The adhesive side of the tape is where these were found. Is that right?
Correct.
So the suggestion would be that however the hairs got on that, and we don't know that how, right?
Correct.
At least the adhesive side was... In a position where the hairs could come in contact with the adhesive and stick to the adhesive. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay. And again, how many hair samples did you gather?
I am not sure. There were a lot.
Okay. Would you need to be able to refresh your recollection with your notes?
I do have all of the hairs itemized. However, some of those adhesives have multiple hairs on them. So it would take a little bit of time to count them all.
Okay.
But I know that I had adhesives going from A to Z, so 26, and then an AA and a BB. So there were 28 adhesives, and then there were one or more hairs on each one of those.
So multiple hairs.
Yes, multiple hairs and fibers, and multiple hairs that we determined could be possibly tested for DNA.
Okay. And those were all, those hairs were located at different times as part of this investigation. Would that be fair?
Yes. The majority of the hairs that were collected initially prior to latent print processing to protect them from what was the initial latent print processing. And then when I went back and swabbed the unidentifiable fingerprint reach detail on the tape, I did locate a few more that I collected separately.
And do you recall approximate dates as to when the first set of hairs were found and then the second set of hairs were found?
I would need to look at my reports.
Could we provide that, Mr. Bailiff? Would you mind, please? Judge, in the interest of time, I don't know if the court has an interest in taking a break and allowing her to look at that so that we could accomplish that at the same time. I'll obviously defer to the state's position in the court.
Yeah, I think it's a logical time to take a mid-morning recess. So we'll go ahead and do that at this time. We'll come back on at 10:25, so we'll take a 20-minute break and come back then. Thank you.
All right, please. All rise. Good report. You have a
second. Thank you. Please be seated. Have the jurors brought in, please. Yes.
All right, please.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, Mr. Pryor, if you'd like to continue with cross, we're back on the record on CR 22211623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell after the mid-morning break, and you may continue with your cross.
And Judge, can I have the last question read back to me, please?
Approximate dates as to the first set of hairs were found and then the second set of hairs were found.
Thank you.
The initial hair collection was done in June of 2020. And then the second round of hair collection was done in December of 2022. And I also wanted to clarify one thing. When I said that there were 28 adhesives collected, that was actually just off one piece of tape. So there are actually quite a few more. There were an additional 14 collections done on that item.
Okay. And let's start with the one piece of tape where the, and you said the one piece of tape had how many pieces of hair?
28 collections. And some of those had more than one. That does include both hairs and fibers.
Are you in a position to testify today about whose hairs those were?
No.
Okay. That was sent off to another lab, is that right?
With the exception of the Bodhi hair that we talked about earlier, the rest were done at a different laboratory.
And in regards to the Bodhi hair and the other hairs, I think you said like 14 other hairs?
There were 15 total collections of hairs, and then each collection had one or more hairs and fibers inside.
Okay. And in relation to the hair of Lori Vallow, were there other hairs in close proximity to that hair on the tape?
I believe that collection had multiple hairs.
Okay.
Yes.
And I talked about this a little bit before, but the adhesive side, and thank you. The adhesive side is how you noted those hairs. So the adhesive side was pulled out and you found the hairs on the adhesive side, correct?
Correct.
And the presumption is that at some point the adhesive side was down as part of the wrapping around JJ, right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And then you mentioned the second set of hairs, and those were in December of 2022.
Yes, that was after the tape had been processed for latent prints, and I was swabbing that unidentifiable ridge detail. There were just a few more that I found still embedded in the tape.
And when you say a few more, how many are we talking about?
I would need to refer to my notes. Okay. Less than 20.
Okay. And at some point, is it your understanding that it's possible to obtain DNA from hair samples?
Correct. For the type of testing that I do, we need a root present. That is where the nuclear DNA is present. There are other types of testing that can be done on hairs without roots.
Right. So in essence, what I understand I'm hearing is that DNA can be pulled and derived from hair samples, correct?
It can be. It's somewhat hit or miss.
Okay. And but as far as the latent prints, did you do DNA testing on those latent prints as well?
I did. And again, only one of those had a DNA profile, and that was consistent with J.J. Vallow.
Okay.
And that was from the tape from his hands.
Now, you talked about originally, you spoke of the various ways that DNA can be found on some of these tools, correct?
Yes.
And it could be done by way of sweat?
For handler DNA or just touch DNA, yes.
Okay. And then as far as breathing on something, if there was spit or moisture or even the breath can leave a sample of DNA, correct?
Correct.
And in addition, if the person actually touches it with their hand, there could be particles from the hand that would leave it as well, correct?
Yes, skin cells could be left behind on that item.
Okay. And your testimony was that it was your belief that because these tools were in Chad Daybell's garage, that you would expect to find Mr. Daybell's DNA on them, correct?
That's very reasonable, yes.
Okay. Now, your investigation was targeted at that point to assume that you weren't going to test those handles, or at least the handle portions, because you would have already assumed that Mr. Daybell was on there. Is that correct?
Well, when they were requested for blood and human remains. In order to swab them, that would have been consumptive. And on at least one of the tools, there was also the possibility of getting latent prints. So you would want to make that decision before we just went ahead and swabbed it if you had wanted it, or if anyone had wanted a different testing method.
And at no point, nobody requested that they wanted that, correct?
No.
Did they request, and the request would have come from the police to you, is that right?
Yes, or the court.
Law enforcement?
Yes.
Okay. Or the prosecuting attorney?
Yes, or by court order.
By court order, okay. And in this situation, who was the one who provided you with the request to do this testing?
This would have been the police department investigating.
Okay. And at some point, you determined you weren't going to go further with DNA testing of the entire tools for Chad Daybell. Did you happen to get a request to test any and all of the tools for the possible DNA of Alex Cox?
That would have, again, fallen under the same swabbing of the handles.
What does that mean?
So, as I mentioned, we did not receive a request for that. And then on at least one or more of the tools, you would have had to make a decision whether or not you wanted handler DNA or potential latent prints, because they would be looking at the same area.
But don't I understand that you didn't look for any DNA on the handles? Isn't that correct?
Correct. Again, swabbing it on an item that maybe could have latents would destroy the latent print. So we were under some guidelines not to consume evidence during portions of the investigation. And so that decision was made not to potentially damage evidence.
Okay. And you're not aware, it's not your department to determine whether there were latent prints on the handles of these tools, right?
No.
That's a different department?
Correct.
So on one hand, your department looks for DNA. The other department looks for latent prints.
Yes, and we do work in concert, but there are sometimes, especially handles of items, where you might have to just choose one or the other.
Okay. But you chose neither on the handles with the DNA or the latent prints, right?
Correct.
And that goes for Alex Cox, correct?
Correct.
What about Melanie Gibb? Did you get any kind of authorization to test for either latent prints or DNA for Melanie Gibb on any of the tools?
No.
What about David Warwick? Did you test for latent prints or DNA on any of the tools for David Warwick?
No.
What about for Lori Vallow? Did you test for DNA or latent prints on any of the handles of the tools for Lori Vallow?
No. If I had swabbed them, everyone that I had a reference sample would have been compared to those samples, but we did not swab them.
And you weren't asked to do that, is that right?
Correct.
Now, I want to touch a little bit about soil and DNA, and you're smiling. Do you know where I'm going?
No.
Okay. That's why you're smiling. Okay. Well, isn't it true that in a situation where there's a body put in the ground, that the DNA can filter into the surrounding soil?
I suppose so, in the form of decomposition and the fluids that are released.
Okay. And if someone were to shovel around the soil, if there's decomposition or if there's any other particles and they have contact with those, that could be a source of DNA on any of the shovels, correct?
Potentially.
Okay. Can you tell me the date and time that the DNA and latent prints that you found were placed on those, or were found, or strike that, Judge, I apologize. Give me a moment. Can you tell me, I want to make sure, the date and time that the DNA came to be put on those tools?
I cannot.
Okay. Can you tell me the date and time when any latent prints would be put on those tools?
I cannot.
You can't ascertain when the DNA was on there. The only thing you're doing today is determining that there was DNA.
Correct.
And if I understand correctly, there's no DNA of any kind that you are responsible for of Chad Daybell. Is that right?
That's correct.
And the DNA that you found on the tools had the DNA of Tylee?
It did.
Okay. And you didn't check for Alex Cox, correct?
No. The only samples I ran were, again, blood or potential human remains.
And you didn't check for Melanie Gibb, right?
No.
And you were testing DNA in general on these tools. It wasn't that, were you targeting it for just Tylee when you did your evaluation?
No, it's compared to all the reference samples that we had at that time.
So in other words, if whoever provides you with the reference samples, you use their reference samples and are limited to that target group of reference samples when you make your decision. Is that right?
For this case, yes.
Okay. Okay. And as far as other DNA found in the way of a hair sample, Lori Vallow was the only other identification that you made at this point, correct?
That identification was made by Bodie Labs.
Okay. And then the additional hairs that were sent off, that's for a future time potentially, correct?
I did not send those out. I simply collected them and then they were ultimately returned to the agency.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay, Judge, I don't think I have anything else.
All right. That'll conclude cross-examination then. Redirect.
Just very briefly, Your Honor. Ms. Stace, in some of the questions you just answered, you mentioned consumptive testing.
Yes.
What does it mean when you say consumptive testing?
It means that in order to obtain a DNA profile, we would need to use the entire sample. So on a very small blood stain or the root of a hair, you would only get one try at it.
Is it fair to say that one of your guidelines is you generally try to preserve evidence as much as possible?
Yeah, that's leading.
Overruled.
Yes, it is our policy to receive permission to consume evidence in cases.
And you were asked about the amount of DNA testing you do, or you did in this case. Have you ever been on a case where you tested every single possible DNA sample?
In general, on a big case, no. I mean, there's sometimes where there's only one in a small case, but in a large case, no. You know, it is our policy that we test to answer questions and then do our best not to overly consume evidence just to test more of the same thing.
And you were asked about testing against Melanie Gibb. You did see that Bodie Lab report, correct?
I did.
And was Melanie Gibb one of the test subjects in that?
She was.
Your Honor, I have no further questions.
Judge, I'd like some follow-up based on the...
Your Honor, I didn't go anywhere that he didn't go and cross.
Yeah, I agree. There's no recross on that narrow redirect, so that'll conclude the testimony of Ms. Dace. Is the state intending to keep her under subpoena or recall her?
Your Honor, at this point, the state would probably keep Ms. Dace under subpoena.
Okay. So, Ms. Dace, there is an exclusionary order, meaning witnesses shouldn't be watching or viewing. Still may be recalled. I'll admonish you not to watch the proceedings since they are available to watch where the trial is being streamed online. If you are released from your subpoena, you'll be contacted by the state or the court to advise you of that, and then that order would be lifted. So thank you for coming in and testifying. That will conclude your testimony this morning.
Thank you.
All right, if the state would like to call its next witness, you may.
It would call Colin Nesbitt, Your Honor.
Okay, yeah.
The solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help me God.
Okay, thank you.
All right, now that the witness has been sworn, I will inquire, have you had any, have you reviewed at all any of the trial testimony by watching the trial online or any observation here in court?
I have not, sir.
Okay, have you talked to anyone else about testimony they've given during this trial?
No, I haven't.
All right. Thank you for answering those questions. Ms. Beatty, if you'd like to inquire on direct, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sir, can you please state your full name and spell your last name?
Colin Drew Nesbitt, N-E-S-B-I-T-T.
And where do you work, sir?
The Kauai Police Department in the state of Hawaii.
How long have you worked with the Kauai Police Department?
A little more than 17 years.
And have you been in law enforcement for 17 years, or did you work in a law enforcement position prior to that?
No, that's it.
What exactly is your job title at the Kauai Police Department?
I'm currently a sergeant assigned to the Patrol Services Bureau.
All right. And prior to being a sergeant for Patrol Services, what was your title?
I was a detective.
Were you a detective for the Kauai Police Department in 2020?
Yes, I was.
What type of training and experience did you have to assist you in your duties as a detective?
I've had roughly 790 hours of basic academy training, and then I've had about 500 additional hours in major crimes.
And what exactly were your job duties as a detective in 2020?
I was assigned to the major crimes unit, so we handled death investigations, sex assaults, and violent crimes.
On January of 25th of 2020, did you have occasion to come into contact with two individuals named Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell?
Yes, I did.
Why did you come into contact with those two individuals on January 25th of 2020?
We were assisting Rexburg Police Department with serving a legal document for Order of Protection Act.
Can you describe what that legal document, the significance of that legal document? What was that legal document?
It was ordering Lori Vallow to bring the JJ Vallow and Tylee Ryan back to the Department of Health in Idaho.
And you made contact with Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell that day?
Yes, I did.
Where was this contact?
It was at 4141 Queen Emma Street in Princeville, Hawaii, and they were in the swimming pool area. It's a condo complex.
Okay. And approximately what time was this?
It was served at 2:39 p.m.
And when these papers were served, who was with you?
Detective Chad Cataluna and Lieutenant Christopher Collio.
And did somebody record the interaction that you had with Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow that day?
Yes, ma'am.
Who was that?
Lieutenant Christopher Collier.
May I have the witness handed what's been marked as State's Exhibit 205? I also have a courtesy copy for the court, and I previously provided a copy to defense counsel yesterday. And the one with the initials goes to the witness.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Sir, what is that?
USB drive.
All right. And do you know what is on that USB drive?
Yes, I do.
What is on that USB?
Yes, I do. Sorry.
What is on that USB drive?
Be a video of serving the legal document that we just spoke about.
And how do you know that?
It has my initials and the date on it.
Okay. And if I could be handed that exhibit? Your Honor, the state would move for admission of Exhibit 205.
Any objection?
No objection, Judge.
All right. Exhibit 205 is admitted.
And Your Honor, if I may publish.
Yes.
Come on. Are you standing, Lord? Ms. Vallow, you can serve.
Do you have any questions regarding that?
So it is 1439 hours on January 25th.
Any questions?
You have any questions for that? No?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, have a nice day.
Have a nice day.
Sir, did you have any further interaction with Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow on January 25th beyond what was seen in that video?
Not on January 25th.
At some time after January 25th, did you have further interaction regarding Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow?
Yes, I did.
What day was that?
January 26th.
And why did you have further interaction with Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow?
And Judge, just as a matter of, could we ensure that we have a clear record of the year that they're referring to? Because I think that's been left out, counsel.
Was that the next day, January 26th of 2020?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And what was the nature of that interaction?
We obtained a search warrant and we were serving that search warrant.
What was the subject of the search warrant?
It was for the person of Lori Vallow, Chad Daybell, the condo unit in Princeville, as well as their vehicle.
When you made contact with Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow on January 26th, where were they?
They were inside their vehicle.
Okay. Did they cooperate when you executed that search warrant?
Yes, they did.
And did you, in fact, perform a search of the vehicle?
Yes, I did.
Where was the search of the vehicle performed?
It was at our evidence warehouse.
So the vehicle was taken from the location where they were picked up, and then the vehicle, or where you made contact with them, I should say, and then the vehicle was taken to a second location?
Correct.
Okay. Did somebody take photographs of the execution of the search warrant of that vehicle?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And if I could have the witness handed what's been marked, the state's exhibit 234A through Z, there's a courtesy copy for the court, and defense counsel was provided a courtesy copy yesterday.
Thank you.
And sir, if you could just look through those and then hand them to the bailiff when you're done. Thank you, sir. Can you tell me what's depicted in state's exhibit 234?
Those are the photos from the search warrant.
And what date were those photos taken?
On the 28th, 2020, January.
So just to be clear for the record, the actual search of the vehicle took place 2 days after Chad and Lori were served with a search warrant?
That is correct.
Okay. And who took those photographs?
Our crime scene lab technician, Christian Vlauten.
Were you present when those photographs were taken?
I was.
And Your Honor, the state would move for the admission of State's Exhibit 234A through Z.
There will not be an objection from the defense, Judge.
Okay. And to make the record clear, Ms. Beatty, is that an inclusive, or have you removed anything between A and Z?
I have not, Your Honor.
Okay. So thank you. Exhibit 234A through Z inclusive is admitted.
And Your Honor, I would just move to publish on the Elmo here.
You may.
Thank you. So we will start with State's Exhibit 234A. Okay, get used to this. Can you tell me what's depicted here?
No, that's the overall of the front of the vehicle that was seized.
And whose vehicle was that?
It's a rental vehicle that Chad and Lori were in.
Okay. And can you tell me what's depicted in State's Exhibit 234B?
It's an initial view of the front door driver's side and Lori Vallow's purse on the seat.
And 234C?
Close up of the same.
Okay. I'd like to pause here for a moment and ask, did you find anything of evidentiary value in Lori Vallow's purse while you were searching Chad Daybell and Lori Vallow's rental vehicle?
Yes.
Can you tell me what that is?
From the purse?
Yes, sir.
There was a cell phone in the side pocket, and there was a debit card with, I think it was a BBVA Compass debit card with the name of Tyler Ryan on it.
Can you tell me what's depicted in 234D?
That's the door jamb on the driver's side between the driver's seat and the door jamb on the floor, and that's a credit card or the debit card.
Okay. 234E.
That's the debit card with Tyler Ryan.
234F.
The back of the same debit card.
Thank you. Can you tell me what we're looking at in 234G?
That's the cell phone that was in the side pocket of her purse.
What was done with that cell phone after the execution of that search warrant?
All those items were shipped back to Rexburg.
Okay. Next, we're going to look at 234H.
That's the passenger side rear door initial view, and a bag on the floorboard, and then a couple bicycles in the cargo area.
Okay. And when you say a couple, how many bicycles were in the cargo area?
There were two total.
Were those children's bicycles or adult bicycles?
They appear to be adult bicycles.
Can you tell me what we're looking at in State's Exhibit 234I?
It's the passenger door.
Okay. And was that the front passenger door or the rear passenger door?
I'm not sure.
Okay, fair enough. I'd like to point to the bottom corner here. What was that item?
Oh, that's the bag that was on the floorboard. So that would be the rear passenger door.
Okay, 234J.
The initial overall view of the rear cargo area with suitcase, a JanSport backpack, and a couple bicycles.
Okay. 234K.
That's a Hawaii Robin Ruth handbag.
And is this the same handbag that we saw a couple photos ago on the rear passenger floorboard?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And did you determine what the contents of that bag were?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And then what are we seeing here in 234L?
That's a overall of some of the contents that were in the bag.
Okay. Can you kind of describe what we're looking at here?
Yeah, there's in this one, there's two Apple laptops or iPads, a manila envelope, and a folder, and a Visions of Glory book.
Okay. 234M?
That's one of the iPads.
Okay. 234N?
The second iPad.
Okay. 234O?
Another iPad in a black OtterBox.
And what do we see on the back of that iPad?
JJ written in red.
Okay. 234P?
That's the other side of the iPad.
And that would be the other side of the iPad with the initials JJ on the back?
Yes, ma'am.
And let me know if you need me to zoom in here, but what are we looking at in 234Q?
That is the certificate for Leland Charles Anthony Vallo.
Do you recall how many copies of death certificates there were for Charles Vallo?
I believe there were 14 in this packet, and then there was three in another packet, so a total of 17.
Did that seem strange to you?
It's a lot, but...
Sure. And what else are we looking at over here on the right-hand side?
That's a real estate paper for the condo unit that they were renting.
Okay. 234R. I can zoom if you need me to.
Yeah, I know there's two social security cards, one with Joshua Vallo and one with Tylee Ryan. There's I believe at the top left-hand corner is a live birth certificate for Tylee Ryan. Okay. And I can't really see the bottom one.
Yes. The bottom one. It's a little blurry here. Are you able to discern that, or do I need to, I could have it handed to you as well.
Yeah, I cannot see that.
We just hand him this. And just for the record, he's being handed 234R. Can you tell me what we're looking at there on the bottom middle of 234R?
It's a birth certificate.
For who? If you're able to read that.
Honestly, I can't read it.
Okay. Are you able to tell what's on the bottom right side?
It's another birth certificate. And I'm sorry, it's so small that I'm having a hard time reading it.
Is it possible that it could be a death certificate on the lower right-hand side? And if you can't tell, that's completely fine.
Yes, it is from the state of Arizona.
Okay. We'll move past 234R.
Sorry.
No worries. It's a very tiny print. Thank you, sir. Moving on to 234S. See, maybe we'll turn it this way. Can you tell me what that is?
Yes, certification of birth from the state of Louisiana for Trey and Kanan Todd.
234T.
Blue Sky property management document for Lori Vallo, Tylee Ryan, and Joshua Vallo.
And was that, where was the property? Does this document indicate where that property was located?
Rexburg, Idaho.
Okay.
And Judge, again, can I have her recite which exhibit this was?
That would be 234T. Thank you, Mr. Pryor. Okay. And all of these items were found in that blue bag?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. 234U. Can you tell me what this is?
That's a letter from Chad Daybell to Alexander Cox.
Okay. What's the date on there?
November 24th, 2019.
And what is the title under that date?
Patriarch Chad Daybell.
Okay. This was also found in the blue bag on the passenger side of the vehicle?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And then 234V. Can you tell me what that is?
It's a JanSport black backpack that was found in the rear cargo area by the bicycles.
Okay, we're going to go a little out of order here. 234X.
It's a patient summary with sticky notes on top.
Okay. And do the words on those sticky notes have any significance to you?
I don't know what any of that means.
Okay. I'm going to leave it up here for a moment so the jurors can look at those sticky notes and see the words on there. Okay. Getting close to the end here. 234Y. What are these?
A silver MacBook Pro and a HP laptop.
Okay. And were those also found in the black JanSport backpack?
Yes.
All right. What's this? I'm sorry. Let me read you the exhibit number. 234Z.
I believe it's the other side of the black HP laptop.
And these iPads, laptop, and cell phone, were these all sent for processing somewhere?
Yes, they were.
Where was that?
Back to the Rexburg Police Department.
The last thing I want to show you is State's Exhibit 234W. What is that?
Envelope with U.S. currency.
Where was that found?
In the backpack.
How much U.S. currency is in there?
All total, there was $10,500.
In cash?
Yes.
Your Honor, if I may have just a moment.
You may. And Judge, could I ask again the last exhibit, what number was that?
234W. Were you present when a search warrant was executed on the condo complex where they were staying?
Yes, I was.
Did you find anything of evidentiary value in that condo complex?
Yes, I did.
And let me back up just a little bit. What date was that search warrant executed?
That was condo complex. It was the 26th of January, 2020.
Okay. And did you find anything of evidentiary value?
Yes, I did.
What was that?
There was a couple rubber type wedding bands. And I don't recall what else. I believe there was only about three items taken.
When you were searching the condo complex, was there any sign that children were living there?
No, ma'am.
Was there any sign that children had ever been there?
No.
Okay. I have no further questions for this witness.
All right, Mr. Pryor, you can conduct cross-examination.
Judge, could I have exhibits 234, please?
Yes.
I was just checking. Good morning, officer.
Good morning, sir.
Okay. Now, sir, you viewed the video at the time and you saw it up at the screen, correct?
Yes, correct.
At any time during that video, did you recall Mr. Daybell making any comment?
No, I do not.
Do you recall seeing Mr. Daybell looking over to see what the papers were?
Yes, I do.
Okay. And would you interpret his actions as trying to read or understand what Ms. Vallow was being served with?
Yeah, it seemed like he was looking to see what that was.
You had an interest in seeing what this was all about, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And you mentioned previously that this was an order regarding, was it a health and welfare order?
It was a order for them, for Lori to bring the kids back to Idaho. I believe it was the Department of Health for Rexburg.
Okay. So it was an order of custody to turn the kids, a custody order, turning the kids over to authorities back in Idaho.
Yes, sir.
So in essence, it was when Mr. Daybell would be reading it, that's what he would read, is that there was an order, custody order, saying that the kids are to be returned back to Idaho. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you discussed a little bit about the credit card that was found on the driver's side, correct?
Yes.
And who was driving that vehicle?
Lori Bell.
Okay. And then the other items you said of pertinent interest were in the back seat of the vehicle, correct?
The cell phone was in the purse on the driver's seat, and then other items in the back of the vehicle, yes.
And in this particular situation, you testified previously that Lori Vallow was the one driving the vehicle, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
And then there were three other seats, correct?
Yes.
And where was Mr. Daybell sitting?
He was sitting in the front passenger seat.
Okay. And you found nothing of evidentiary interest on Mr. Daybell's side of the vehicle, is that right?
That is correct.
And then in terms of the, I noted that on one of the exhibits, 234B, and Judge, I may ask that the witness be handed 234B. I noticed that on the console between the seats, there's a book.
Do you have any and it's terribly difficult to see that, but do you have any recollection of what that book is?
Not really.
You don't know of what faith that book comes from?
No, I don't.
Okay. Judge, can I, or Mr. Bailiff, thank you. Then you went on to talk about a blue, was it a bag or a suitcase?
There was a Hawaii Robin Ruth handbag.
Okay, and who would that be assigned to? Do you know?
I don't know.
You don't know who the owner of that bag was?
No.
And in the contents of that bag, you found what?
Most of the stuff, the death certificates, birth certificates, social security cards, three tablets, and some other items.
Okay, and where was the location of that bag?
It was in the rear passenger seat right behind where Mr. Daybo was sitting.
Okay. And then you talked about a black backpack. Were you able to ascertain who owned the black backpack?
I was not.
Okay. Now, when you stopped the Daybells, was this a traffic stop of some kind?
Yes, it was originally.
Was there any indication that Miss Vallow was trying to flee at that point?
No, there was not.
She cooperated fully with you?
Yes, she did.
And at any time, did Mr. Daybell make any statements during that stop?
No, he did not.
Okay. Did he cooperate fully with you?
Yes, sir, he did.
And there was no indication that Mr. Daybell was trying to flee at any point. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Judge, may I have a moment?
Yes.
And I noticed that on Exhibit W, you had talked about the currency. Where did you locate the currency?
That was in the backpack.
And again, you don't know who owned that backpack?
I don't have definitive proof who owned the backpack.
And again, can you identify the specific items that you found in that backpack again?
There was a silver MacBook Pro and a black HP laptop.
Okay. Were you able to ascertain who was the owners of those respective devices?
No, I did not.
Okay. What else did you find in the backpack?
The currency.
Okay. Anything else?
There was like a wallet with four credit cards in there.
And whose credit cards were those?
Chad Daybell.
Okay. Any other items found in the backpack?
There was a death certificate and a marriage license.
Okay. Anything else?
That's all I can recall at this time.
Okay. Judge, I have nothing else. Thank you.
All right, that'll conclude the cross-examination then. Any redirect, Ms. Beatty?
Oh, sir.
Mark, we have a brief sidebar.
Sure.
Just a couple of questions.
Sure.
Mr. Pryor asked you if Mr. Daybell said anything when you made contact with them in their vehicle on the 26th, correct?
Yes.
And he didn't say anything?
Not that I recall.
He didn't say, what's this about?
I don't remember him saying anything.
Okay. And you were asked if the defendant or Lori Vallow tried to flee, correct?
Yes, I was.
And you were contacted by the Rexburg Police Department?
Yes, I was. Well, not me directly, no.
Of course. Your agency, fair to say your agency was contacted by the Rexburg Police Department?
Yes, correct.
Is that because Chad and Lori had left Idaho?
I assume so.
Okay. And just to clarify something, you were asked about whether anything of evidentiary value was found in the passenger side of the vehicle?
Yes.
Okay. Was anything of evidentiary value found in the passenger side of the vehicle? Not the front seat, but the entire passenger side?
Yes.
Just as a clarifying question.
Yes. Okay.
And what was that?
That was the Hawaii Robin Ruth bag with all the contents.
And was one of the contents of that bag a patriarchal blessing?
Yes, it was.
That day, Bell? Okay. I have no further questions.
All right, thank you. That'll conclude the testimony then of this officer, Nesbitt. Is the state intending to have him recalled?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
From the defense?
Judge, there's no subpoena on this witness, and I'm not calling him back.
All right, Officer Nesbitt, then you are excused. Thank you for coming in and testifying today, and you can go ahead and step down, and I'll ask the state to call another witness.
Your Honor, the state's going to be calling Ben Dean. I do apologize. I did make a mistake this morning thinking I brought up my folder for Ben Dean with his exhibit. I did not, so I'm going to ask for just a very quick break to run down to our room and grab that. And I do apologize for wasting anybody's time.
Well, that's fine. We'll take a brief recess to allow you to get that, Mr.
And then we'll have him on very shortly.
Okay. If everyone wants to just stand up for a moment. I don't know if the jury wants to retire back to the hallway for a minute. Let's go ahead and do that. Okay. All right, Mr. Woody, are you ready to call your next witness? That's fine.
State would call Ben Dean.
Very well.
You solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God. Thank you.
All right. The witness has been sworn. I have a few questions before we start the direct examination. Mr. Dean, have you watched any of these trial proceedings on the court's online streaming or through any other source?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Have you talked to anyone about any testimony they've provided here at trial?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you for answering that. Mr. Wood, if you'd like to inquire on direct, you can do so.
Thank you. Good morning. Morning. Can you state your name and spell it for the record?
Benjamin Dean, B-E-N-J-A-M-I-N-D-E-A-N.
And where are you employed?
The Federal Bureau of Investigation.
What position do you currently hold at the FBI?
I'm an intelligence analyst.
And how long have you been an intelligence analyst at the FBI?
About 8 years.
Can you describe your educational, professional, and training background to hold that position?
Yes, I obtained a bachelor's degree in foreign language and foreign area studies. And then my first position in the FBI was with the language services section, where my job was to review and report on the lawfully obtained electronic communications of predicated case subjects in different parts of the country. Later, I became an intelligence analyst after attending and completing the basic field training course at the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia. And that was a 3-month course that consisted of classroom instruction, exercises, and exams on a number of different topics, including analytical writing, threat analysis, and raw intelligence reporting.
And what office of the FBI are you currently assigned to?
The Salt Lake City Field Office.
What are your day-to-day responsibilities?
My main job is to review or is to analyze information and make assessments regarding specific threats. And so some of my day-to-day tasks might include reviewing information from a broad range of sources, looking for trends and patterns in that information, and then writing reports or giving briefings with findings and recommendations. And then since I currently work on a criminal investigative squad, I often provide support to active cases.
Do you have any specific training or experience in reviewing electronic communications?
Yes.
Can you explain that experience?
Sure. During my time with the language services section, I attended a week-long course focused on best practices and techniques in monitoring and reporting on electronic communications records. I later, at the FBI Academy, received training in digital evidence collection, exploitation, and in the use of telephone analysis software. Since then, I've completed virtual and in-person trainings on that topic, on that subject. And of course, as an analyst in the field, I've had several occasions where I've reviewed those types of records in support of active cases. And so while I'm not an expert in the field, and I am not a digital forensics examiner by trade, I have been able to gain some working knowledge and familiarity with the subject.
Okay. Have you been involved in the investigation into Chad and Lori Daybell?
Yes.
When did your involvement in this case, in the Daybell case, begin?
It began in late March of 2020.
What was your initial assignment in the case?
My initial assignment in the case was to review tips that had been submitted by members of the public in response to a press release that was issued by the FBI and the Rexburg Police Department on the 5th of March, 2020, regarding Tylee Ryan and JJ Vallow, who were missing at the time. And both Tylee and JJ had been seen at Yellowstone National Park on the 8th of September. And so the press release requested that the members of the public, anyone who had been to the park that day, who had visited and had taken photos or videos during their trip, to please send those in so that law enforcement could review them in hopes that they would aid in finding the children.
And do you recall, you already answered this, you started working on this late March of 2020?
Yes.
Can you briefly describe the volume of tips and media you reviewed as part of that initial assignment?
I would estimate somewhere between 600 and 800 unique tips were submitted by members of the public in response to that press release. Some of the tips had only text information that the tipster thought could help. And other tips had multiple media file attachments, photos and videos. And so in total, I would estimate I've reviewed several hundred photos or videos as part of the initial assignment.
Were you ever tasked with another assignment in support of that investigation?
Yes, I was.
What was that?
I was asked to assist with the review of electronic devices that were seized from Chad Daybell's residence on January 3rd of 2020.
And do you recall what devices you were to look at?
Initially, I was assigned to review data that was pulled off of a hard drive and a thumb drive.
And when did you complete your review of those devices?
I completed my review of those devices in May, sometime in May of 2020.
Were you asked to review any other data from any other devices?
Yes.
What were the additional devices you were asked to review?
I was asked to review the contents of two Blu-ray discs, each of which contained data that was extracted from electronic storage devices seized from Chad Daybell's property on January 3rd of 2020.
So the data you were provided was on Blu-ray discs?
Yes.
Were the discs labeled?
Yes, they were.
How were they labeled?
Both discs had a unique FBI specimen number written on them. So one disc had the number IWR091201, and the other one was labeled IWR091202. And also both discs had the words working copy written on them.
Do you recall which disc you reviewed first?
I first reviewed the disc labeled IWR091201.
And when did you begin your review of the disc? When did you begin your review of that disc?
Late May of 2020.
What was the process you used to review that data on that disc?
So I used a Blu-ray disc reader to open up the contents of the disc on my work computer. I saw that the main file folder on the disc was titled IWR091201. I went into that folder and found a subfolder with an application file. It's called cellbrightreader.exe, and also a UFDR file with the name IWR091201report.ufdr. So I double-clicked on the application file to launch the Cellbrite Reader software. And once it was fully loaded, I used it to open the UFDR file.
And can you briefly explain to the jury what is Cellbrite Reader?
Cellbrite Reader is essentially, it's a software program, and it allows for the review and analysis of data pulled off of electronic storage devices. And yeah, that's basically what it is.
And you mentioned a UFDR file. What is that?
So a UFDR file is basically a report containing all of the data items pulled off of a device. And UFDR files can be opened and viewed with Cellbrite Reader.
How does the data appear in Cellbrite Reader when you open it up?
When you open Cellbrite Reader, you'll see a list of categories on the left-hand side. And so that's because Cellbrite Reader organizes all of the data items that are on a device into categories based on the item's file type. So some examples of categories would be autofill items, calendar items, device contacts, things of that nature, and also communication items such as emails, phone calls, SMS or text messages, or multimedia or MMS messages.
All right. And what file types do you typically look at to determine the user of a given device?
Typically, I look at four areas. I look to see if there's a device user listed. I look at if it's a phone, I look at the phone number that's associated with the device. And I look at the content of any communications items that are on the device. And I also look at any photos or videos that could be on the device that may show me who the device belonged to.
So this device that you were recently just telling us about, or that the data that you had on this Blu-ray disc, did you look at all those file types for this device?
I did.
And when reviewing those items, did it become apparent what type of device it was?
Yes.
What type of device was it?
It was an LG cellular phone.
Were you able to ascertain who the user of that device was?
Yes, I was.
How did you ascertain that?
I ascertained that the user of the device was Tammy Daybell, who was the wife of Chad Daybell. And that was apparent to me for several reasons. First, the device user was listed as Tammy. Second, the phone number associated with the device matched with the phone number for Tammy Daybell as it appeared in other documents obtained in this investigation. There were incoming messages on the device addressing Tammy. There were outgoing messages with the user, the sender, introducing herself as Tammy, or in the case of emails, signing off an email with Tammy. And there were group messages, direct messages, and phone calls with other members of the Daybell family and their spouses, all of whom were named as contacts in that device. And the content of those, of the written messages, suggested that the user of this device, of this phone, had a close family relationship with the Daybell children. There were also device notifications showing new posts by members of the Daybell family in a Facebook group called Daybells and MERS. There were photos on the device showing Tammy Daybell both by herself and with Chad Daybell, their children, and their grandchildren. And then finally, I did observe that all of the outgoing communication activity on the device ended the evening of October 18th, 2019, which I know to be the day before first responders discovered Tammy deceased inside her home.
For the record, do you recall the phone number associated with this device?
Yes, it was 801-669-4368.
I want to draw your attention to September 9th, 2019. Did Tammy's phone receive any text messages that day?
Yes.
Were there any text messages sent to Tammy's phone that day that caught your attention?
Yes, there were.
What was the phone number from which those messages were sent?
801-690-9374.
Is it possible that that was a 208 instead of an 801?
Yes, it is. 208-690-9374.
Was there a contact name stored on the phone for that number?
The contact name was Chad.
Throughout your review of this device, have you reviewed other messages sent by the contact save as Chad?
Yes.
And based on your review of those other messages sent by that phone number, who did you believe that that number belonged to?
Based on my review of the other messages, I believe that that phone number belonged to Chad Guy Daybell, who was the husband of Tammy Daybell.
And can you explain to the jury why you came to that conclusion?
Yes. First off, that same number ending in 9374 also appeared in other documents obtained in the investigation that associated the number as being one of the phone numbers used by Chad Daybell. That number ending in 9374 was also part of group messages with other members of the Daybell family and their spouses. Again, all of whom were named as contacts in this device. And the content of those group messages also suggested that the user of that phone number, ending in 9374, had a close family relationship with the Daybell children. And also the communications, the content of the messages between the device user, Tammy, and user of this phone number ending in 9374 suggested or made it clear that they both lived in the same home and that there was another individual named Garth who lived in that home with them.
Your Honor, I would ask that the witness be handed what's been marked as State's Exhibit 229. I provided a copy to counsel and have a courtesy copy for the court as well.
Very well.
Agent, do you recognize what's been marked as State's Exhibit 229?
Yes, I do.
What does it purport to be?
It is a copy of text messages that were exchanged between Chad Daybell and Tammy Daybell on the 9th of September.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.